this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Y'allitics. Wheeler is out. He says it's a much-deserved vacation. Who knows? But he's off for a few days, so good for him. We just got off the line, though, with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and we talked at length with him. So the session is over. The legislative session is over. 140 days in Austin. They passed more than 1,000 bills down there. But there's still a lot of other things happening right now that could carry over into the summer. We talked about a number of those things. Number one, the THC ban. The lawmakers in the House and in the Senate both passed a ban on THC. It's effectively going to shut down and close 7,000 or 8,000 of these vape shops you see all around the state. But what's interesting now is there's this huge pressure campaign on Governor Abbott to veto this bill, and he has until the 22nd of June to do that. So we'll be watching to see whether he actually vetoes it. Remember, this is one of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's top priorities, is this THC ban. So it's one of the things we talked to him about in this interview you're about to see here. We also asked whether there might be a special legislative session sometime this summer at the request of President Trump. You may have seen the reporting in the New York Times. I've also heard the chatter for a while now, but reportedly Donald Trump wants to ensure that there aren't any losses in Congress next year for the midterm elections, and he wants Texas to redistrict itself and draw safer lines for Republicans, drawing more districts for Republicans to actually win. It's up to the governor, Governor Abbott, to actually call a special session, but this is one of the things we talked to the lieutenant governor about, because his chamber, the Senate, would have to actually consider this. And then there's another issue that got by me this past legislative session, and he talks about it here in just a moment. Texas is pulling some money from border security, because the border has been shut down essentially since President Trump got elected. So the state is pulling some of its own border money and it's using some of that for property tax relief. This was a wide-ranging interview. We discussed a number of things with the Lieutenant Governor. Here's Dan Patrick. Governor Patrick, welcome back to the program here. The THC ban, this was one of your top priorities behind school vouchers, of course, and a few other things, but this was a priority of yours. It passed. Now opponents are really picking up the campaign and urging Governor Abbott to veto this thing. What do you expect to happen?
Yeah, I'm not surprised the opponents are out there trying to stop this, because who are the opponents, Jason? The opponents are the cannabis industry from Colorado and California, with ties to China and Mexico, very likely, that have been importing these poisonous products into Texas. What you have here, Jason, is in the last 3 to 4 years, over 8,000. I want to put that in perspective, Jason. 8,000 smoke shops and vape shops have opened up, many illegally without any registration or permitting whatsoever. They actually don't need an official permit, but they register with Health and Human Services. So many of them did, many of them did not. Yeah. And they're selling products that no one has any idea what's in them in terms of their potency. And all the testimony that we receive from law enforcement, that we receive from the medical profession, and we receive from educators, talk about how this is impacting our students in our schools, in addition to the parents that had such terrible stories. Look, just this past weekend, you had a case in a school district near the Dallas-Fort Worth area where seven graduating students were sent to the hospital because they'd eaten some gummies from these stores. What we exposed and uncovered, Jason, in the last year was that we are under assault by this industry that came in through a loophole in the hemp bill that we passed a few years ago. And we warned the industry, if you took advantage of that hemp bill at that time that was meant to help farmers, we would shut you down. And so, but put this in comparison, Jason, when I say 8,000 or more of these smoke shops and vape shops, that's 8 more times than the number of McDonald's we have in the state. We have about 1,100 McDonald's or 1,300 Starbucks. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. They've seen them everywhere. And where did they target these stores? Most of them were within 1,000 to 2,000 feet of our schools. And the products, you don't know what's in them. It's totally an unregulated market. And they have warnings on the packages, Jason. I did a press conference, as you may have seen, where I held up one bag of candy that had 16,000 milligrams of THC in it. That's the intoxicating element of marijuana. Each gummy was 800 milligrams. The package says on the back, if you're new to this, you might just want to take a bite of a gummy, because it could impact you. And I did some undercover work, you know, my old days of being a television reporter, and went into some of these stores. So this industry moved into Texas over the last 3 years or so. This is not a mom and pop industry, by the way. You know, 3 years ago, a bunch of families, and there may be some exceptions to the rule, that opened a store, but the vast majorities were opened up by a few organizations that have come in like a military assault on our state to poison our students and young adults as well. Very quickly, we just had a young man in February who shot his mother 3 times after eating some of these products. We had a 22-year-old testimony, stepped in front of a train in El Paso after he'd been hooked on this. He didn't know where he was. We had a parent who said for the first time in her life, she was afraid to be around her 17-year-old because he was hooked on all of this. These are poisonous products being sold to kids primarily, but adults as well, in these smoke shops that are running afoul of laws and afoul of the federal government as well as the state. And their story is, oh, we're small business, help us. No, you're not small business. This is an industry trying to assault Texas and hook kids on drugs forever. And when I uncovered it, when I saw it, when I learned everything I could, when we had all the law enforcement across the state support me on this, and again, the medical groups, et cetera, we knew we were onto something, and that's why we banned it. It passed in the Senate, I think 27-4, 26-5, overwhelmingly with bipartisan support. It's destroying neighborhoods, it's destroying families, and that's why we're banning it.
Governor, you know what's rare about this THC ban issue, though, is you've had pushback from conservative voices that usually stand in lockstep with you and don't usually question your conservative values there. But a number of conservatives say that, you know, this creates a nanny state, this pushes THC underground, it helps the Mexican drug cartels. What's your reaction to that?
Well, so the conservative voices speaking out are, I respect them. I respect their view. Some of that is a libertarian point of view that we should, some of that is the point of view that people want a marijuana, recreational marijuana legalized in our state. We haven't passed that law and we're not going to pass that law. There aren't the support for that. And our voters don't support that. It's from a lot of people that have a different point of view. I respect their point of view, but they don't know what we know. They either didn't watch the hearings or they don't know the facts. And when you have 8,000 stores or more open up within 1,000 or 2,000 feet of all of our schools, selling products with highly intoxicating THC at levels never seen before, everybody knows what's going on and how this is poisoning our young people and putting lives at risk. So I can't help it if they disagree. This has nothing to do with my conservative credentials. This has everything to do with my number one job, Jason, as is everyone who gets elected to office, is to protect the life and the safety and welfare of Texas citizens. So some of these people will never agree, and others just don't have the facts. And if they just disagree, that's fine. It's very seldom you find agreement, even in the Republican Party, 100% of the time. But I know what's right. We know what's right. The Senate, every Republican passed for this, voted for it in the Senate, overwhelming majority of all Republicans in the House. So this, and again, you talked to, we had the DA from Collin County that came in and testified. We had sheriffs, the Sheriff's Association came by. Everyone came in and said, this is in essence, through the back door, we have legalized drugs of highly intoxicating potency being sold in these stores, and everyone goes in and says, oh, that's a bag of gummies, that's a bag of candy, that's a bag of popcorn. They have no idea what they're testing, and they have no idea of what's happening. We have a 500% increase in the calls into the poison center, Jason, on THC-related cases. Democrats and Republicans, Royce West, Senator from El Paso, Cesar Blanco, got up and gave a passionate speech about these issues, how it's destroying neighborhoods. So This is for the people who are against it. Some of them are just libertarians and they want everything goes to all the time. That's fine. We just disagree. And others just don't have the facts.
Have you spoken to Governor Abbott? Is he going to veto this? Will he let it just slide into law and not sign it? Or do you expect him to actually sign this into law?
My job is to do the work and pass laws to protect Texans. And his job is to review all those laws and decide which ones he's going to sign and which ones he's not.
But
in all of my years,
Governor, you're so plugged in there. What's the chatter down there about this thing?
Jason, you're my friend. You're not going to put me on the spot with a few weeks to go before the veto deadline to get in between me and the governor, quite frankly. My job is to pass important bills. It passed with overwhelmingly support of Republicans in both chambers. It's passed with total support of law enforcement everywhere, support of the medical most doctors who know the issue came in and testified, as well as the schools who are being overrun by this. All the evidence is there. That's what we present to the governor on any bill, Jason, on any bill. We passed 1,000 bills this session. I don't sit down with the governor to talk to him on, quite frankly, any of the bills and say, are you going to veto this one? What do you like about this one? We work through the session. He knows what we've done. He knows the work. He'll make the decision.
Every 2 years, it seems like we have this conversation and it's the most conservative session ever. How would you describe this session that just ended?
This is the most conservative session ever. The most conservative session ever. Because for the first time, Jason, I had a speaker I could work with. I mean, the last speaker, who by the way, was only one of two Republicans who still voted against school choice. You know, he killed it the last session. That's the reason
I'm not Dade Feeler
anymore. Yeah. And he's also come out to veto the THC bill. You know, he's the former speaker. I don't think he talked to me maybe three times in 2 years. I talked to Ken Paxton, the attorney general, same thing. I don't think he had any conversations. He was just a disaster as a speaker. And the speakers before that weren't that conservative. But Dustin Burroughs came in, and I didn't agree with the way he was elected because Democrats put him in office, 52 yeah. Republicans out of 88 voted against him. I just support the process in the House, which talked about the caucus should pick the speaker, not the other party. But I deal and work with who gets elected. And from day one, Dustin Burroughs and I had a great working relationship on every issue. We communicated, you know, three, four, five times a week on the telephone or in person. We worked through tough, tough bills. This is the best conservative session, most conservative session we've ever had. Look, the Senate, we've passed conservative legislation every session, as you know. And it died in the House, died in the House. And look, there were bills that still didn't make it. You know, in a session, we have 130 some days, 140 days to pass bills, and some don't make it over the finish line. But when you look at all the bills that were passed, I passed all of my 40 priorities out of the Senate, conservative priorities out of the Senate, and most of them are heading to the governor. And the speaker was very helpful in that. So we worked very well together, and that's why it happened. It was time for this to happen. And I think the elections and the primary last year sent a message to a lot of members in the House. People are watching how you vote. So we had, look, there were 15 people, Jason, last session who voted against school choice, and they were pretty much all defeated. That sent a message. You know, we couldn't get a vote in the House. I passed school choice five times, Jason. And finally, on the sixth time, it passed the House, 86 out of 88. Voted for it. They listened to the voters finally, and they saw the results of elections. And so that's why it happened.
The Senate passed all 40 of your priorities, yes, as you mentioned there. Most all of them did pass the House. What didn't pass this legislature that you're going to be working on in the interim?
Yeah. So there were a couple of big successes, but had a little bit of downturn to them. For example, this is the first time we've ever passed meaningful bail reform. The House and the Senate passed strong bail reform supported by the governor, supported by Joan Huffman, who has been leading on that. We passed it out three or four sessions in a row, never got a vote on the other side. Democrats killed it. Former speakers let them kill it. But we passed significant bail reform to keep felons behind bars. However, there were two votes, Jason, which is amazing to me. One says, if you're here illegally and you're already in jail with a felony, that you can't get bail. And the Democrats blocked that bill because that's a constitutional amendment to change the law. We needed 100 votes in the House. They got to 97. So you have the Democrat Party. We got to remember there's still a difference. In the House, the Democrat Party voted to block a bill that would have kept illegal immigrants who had already committed a felony from getting out of jail when they committed the second felony. And it was going to be called Jocelyn's Law, the little girl in Houston, where I live, who was raped and tortured and murdered under a bridge by two people here illegally who had already shouldn't have been out of jail. And the Democrats blocked that. So we're going to go back and pass that. We needed 100 votes. We got to 96 or 97 in the House. By the way, the Democrats and the Senate are different for the most part. We passed that bill. In fact, Royce West, again, the senator from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, as you know, he stood on the floor and said, every Democrat should support these bills. We need to keep these bad people behind bars. We passed both of those bills out of the Senate. And the other one was another continuing bill. If you've already been arrested for murder in one case and you're out and you get arrested again, you shouldn't get bail. I mean, who wouldn't be for that? The thing I don't understand about the Democrats in the Texas House or the Democrats in general in the country, why are they taking up for criminals? Why aren't they looking out for the victims? Because I know in every one of those House Democrat districts, that if they asked their voters, do you think we should keep people who are charged with murder, rape, child sex offender behind bars, especially if they've done it before and they're already out? I know what the answer is. So those are two things we would work on. So that's just two things, but a lot. Look, I don't know how much time you have, what you want to talk about, but property taxes, for example, in 15 minutes, Dustin and I sat down, literally 15 minutes in February or so on a handshake, and came to the conclusion of what we were going to do for property tax. And it's the biggest property tax cut ever. You know, right, that I've been a fighter for the homestead exemption. For people that don't remember, back in 2015 and long before that, the homestead exemption was $15,000, meaning if you lived in a $300,000 home, you paid school property taxes on a $285,000 home. Well, we raised that to 25, then we raised it to 40 in the Senate, then we raised it to 100 last year. And then this year, now it's $200,000 for seniors and $140,000 for those under 65. So if you're a senior watching this, either streaming or live on television or on your show, the average senior in Texas will no longer for the rest of their life have to pay any property school taxes at all. That's always been a dream of mine. And we finally made it happen because I had a speaker to work with. And for those under 65, your school property taxes are now cut about 50% from where they were 5 years ago with your $140,000 homestead exemption. So those are the kind of things the speaker and I work together on.
Yeah, we watched the property taxes and your efforts on that for a number of years now to increase the homestead exemption. It is remarkable to see what's happened with that. Let me ask you about reports that President Trump wants to redraw Texas congressional districts. I've heard the chatter from a number of Republicans and Democrats. I've said, you know, hey, will there be a special session on anything? And they said, well, this is probably going to be it. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Is this going to happen? What's your take on this?
If we have a special session, we'll be there and we'll take up the issues the governor puts on the call.
Do you expect any special sessions right now? Is there any talk of any that you know of?
Once again, Jason, that's up to the governor to call. And if he makes the decision to call a special session, he alone can make the decision what are the issues we take up on the session. Like we might take up these two bond bills again, or other issues. So we'll wait. And when the governor makes the call, the Senate will show up and we'll be there. And hopefully the Democrats don't do what they did years ago when they all left and went to Washington, the Texas House, and broke quorum.
Yeah, 2003 is when they went to up to Oklahoma and then out to Albuquerque for a month. I remember that. I was covering
How about 2021? Remember 2021?
I remember that too. I went to D.C. with them as well, to the hotel up there in D.C.
We'll take it as it is. There are a lot of other things, Jason, by the way, to talk about. I know we've focused on SB3 and the property taxes, but some other big issues that we tackled. And look, it's not up to people to follow everything that happens. I just, as I was sharing with you before we went on the air, I traveled to 12 cities around the state, from Beaumont to El Paso and Tyler to the Valley and to Amarillo, all over the place, telling people, you know, what passed and what didn't pass. But on education, well, let me get this message out too. We passed the biggest funding bill for education in the history of the state in one session, $8.5 billion. And a lot of people don't understand when we talk about cutting property taxes, what actually happens. When we say we're cutting your school taxes, it's not that the schools aren't getting the same money. The state is writing the check in your place, Jason. So if you're a homeowner, if you're a senior, you're not a senior yet, you will be one day. But if you were a senior, basically the state is paying the school taxes for you, the average senior. That's why you don't have to pay. Or that 50% cut that you're going to get if you're under 65. So we write the check to the school districts to replace that money. But on top of that, we added $8.5 billion. And we did it in a way, Jason, that is going to change education forever. And it was unified. This was an area where Republican and Democrats were on the same page, that we're not sending all the money to the superintendent to decide how to spend it anymore. What we are doing is putting it in buckets. So we have a bucket for teacher pay. So the average teacher salary, Jason, back 6 or 7 years ago was about $54,000. After this session, $69,000, plus incentives for those who really excel. They could be in the 80s or more, but 54 to 69. And why did this happen? Because in the past, when we had increased school funding year after year, it wasn't getting to the teachers. And the most valuable person in the whole school system is the teacher. I value the superintendent and the counselors and the administrators and the department heads, but the teacher is key, and we have to pay teachers as the professionals they are and should be, and we have to attract the best and brightest out of college and the private sector to become teachers, and money is the key there. And since I've been lieutenant governor, we've increased teacher pay every time. We tried to pass it last session. It died in the House. So big teacher pay. We have a bucket that goes to teachers, Jason, a bucket that goes to bus drivers and cafeteria workers and maintenance workers and infrastructure, a bucket for special needs kids. We put about $1 billion into that, a bucket for school security. So the superintendent is still going to get his money per student because we fund schools per student in the classroom, but they're getting these extra buckets of money. So you pass a big property tax cut for schools, to seniors and those under 65. We put more money into teachers' pockets than ever before, more funding into public schools. And along with that, we passed school choice for the first time. School choice, $1 billion for 100,000 kids. That program will start in 2026 because we have to set it up. And then we put some values back in our schools. The Ten Commandments are going to be in every classroom, required in every classroom. And prayer is back in public school. We're not compelling people to pray, Jason, but they have, if they want to pray to whomever they want to pray to in their own private time, that student is going to be allowed. On the Ten Commandments, it's not an unfunded mandate. What we're asking is churches to adopt a school, companies to adopt a school, individuals to adopt a school. You take a framed 16 by 20, Ten Commandments, clearly, you know, legible, you take it to the school, they're required to hang it in the classroom. And so a lot happened for education and cutting school taxes and funding schools this session.
Let me ask you about education, because I've heard from some superintendents, and you just brought them up there. You mentioned the per pupil funding, and Democrats were asking, I think, for $1,200 or $1,300 per pupil. House Republicans were $361, I believe, and the final decision was about $55 per pupil.
Is that malarkey, Jason? And by the way, I know you do well, but my guess is you don't make $1 million a year. So let me just put this in comparison.
Sure.
The Democrats say we need a $1,000 increase per funding pupil, or we need $1,500. It would cost the state somewhere around $15 to $25 billion, depending on the number. It's just an impossible number. They just throw it out. They don't even know what they're talking about. And nor does some in the education community. So what we did, we increased funding. If you add up all those buckets and what the schools are getting, we added about $400 to $450 per student this session. We're now going to be somewhere between $16,000 to $17,000 per student. That's per student when you count. So
annual per student funding, right?
Yeah. When you add all these buckets. See, that's why I told the members this during session at the end. They were getting all these calls from superintendents. We don't like this. We don't like this. We don't like this. The reason they didn't like it was because we were telling them how to spend it, because we didn't think many were spending it the correct way. The teachers weren't getting the lion's share of the money.
Right. And so you have the buckets for the different pay raises and things like that.
Yeah. We didn't have one call that I know of, Jason, from one teacher association or one teacher union or one teacher complaining about the fact that we were putting in $4 billion for teacher raises. We didn't get calls from anybody else except superintendents. Parents weren't complaining. Grassroots weren't complaining. Because we said we're going to target the money. And that was Republicans, Democrats agreed to do this. I mean, that budget passed unanimously in the Senate. So everybody said, wait a minute, we're going to fund our schools. And I'm sorry, Mr. Superintendent, we like you. Many of you are doing a great job, but some of you aren't very good at managing your money. So we have an obligation on behalf of the taxpayers to help you manage that money in the right way and make sure it goes in the right places. So the rest of it's malarkey. But the idea that we could put $1,000 or $1,500 on, we don't have that kind of money. Again, we spent $8.5 billion as it was just to get to 400 more.
Yeah, per student. Gotcha. You're already endorsing in Senate races. I've noticed here. Do you plan to endorse in the comptroller or AG races, attorney general race?
When I'm on the ticket in 26, and people may have not noticed this, but in statewide races in the past, the governor didn't endorse me. I didn't endorse him. The attorney general didn't endorse either of us, or vice versa. We all run our own race. And so I don't endorse in any statewide race. I won't get involved in the controller's race. I won't get involved in the attorney general's race. I won't get involved in the U.S. senator's race. I'm on the ballot. When you're on the ballot, you just stay in your own lane.
Gotcha.
I won't be endorsing senators because we have a number of senators who may be leaving. You know, one of them, Mays Middleton, for example, is running for general already. He's up and out. If he loses, he doesn't come back in the Senate. So I've already endorsed in that race, for example. We may have three or four others running statewide or retiring. So I do get involved in those races because my success depends on having great senators. I have the best Senate I've ever had. And again, we work well across the aisle on so many things and areas that are the difference between the parties. You know, we separate and have our battles, but we work. The Senate is a well-oiled machine. We get our job done.
And you just mentioned again, you've told me before, but you are running in 2026 for re-election.
Yes.
No reconsideration of that after this session.
Oh no! Look, this is. I love what I do. We're hitting on all cylinders. There's more to do. For example, we've again made a big dent in school property taxes, but then now we need to go after the local taxes. We need to regulate.
What's the plan there? Yeah.
Well, we've already limited cities and counties to no more than 3.5% growth, but they kind of find some loopholes to get around it. We stopped this waiver system where many of them were declaring a waiver for the simplest emergency to increase their taxes, you know, 4%, 5%, 8%. So we're focused on that. But we need to focus on homeowners insurance because all of us, myself included, you know, the story is the same for all of us. You can't even find anyone to insure your house anymore. And, you know, your deductibles on your roof are more than roofs used to cost. So we got to focus on that issue, the crime issue, and everything we're doing in the infrastructure. We have to continue that, Jason. Just in the last 2 years, we've spent over $30 billion between improving the grid, strengthening the grid, water. We spent $3 billion and built a new fund for that that will be billions over the years. And our roads, we have to keep up with our infrastructure. And we've done all this, Jason, with still passing a budget that's under the constitutional limit of inflation times population. I see these stories out there on the internet. It's a bloated budget. It's this, it's that.
Yeah.
No, it's not. We're under the constitutional commitment of what the people voted on. Don't spend more than population times inflation. In addition to that, we still held back about $4 billion in this budget we could have spent that we didn't. You don't spend all the money. You never know what's ahead. We still have $27 billion in the rainy day fund. And we took the border money that was a dividend when Donald Trump got elected because we were spending billions a year. We took $3 billion of that from the border and put it into property tax cuts. You know, when I mentioned the property tax.
I didn't realize this. So $3 billion came out of what we're spending on the border to go into the property tax cuts? Really?
Yeah, we were able to use that money in different ways because we had to spend all that money before, Jason. And you look, all money is fungible. You could say it came from here, it came from there.
Sure.
But the point is, we took that we're still supporting the federal government. We're still spending a lot of money and we're asking to get paid back from the federal government. And the big, beautiful bill, there's about $12 billion. Right. The House agreed to send back to Texas that we spent. But we said, hey, we're going to use that money because the border's secure with this president. We got it secured and we don't have to do what we did before. We're still at a very high level, but not the level that we had to spend before. So all those issues are really important. And when I see these, you know, when I had someone who said to me one day, a member said, well, you know, the reason we have these surpluses is because we're overcharging in sales tax. I said, no, it's because our economy continues to grow. 1,000 people a day are moving here. And we take those dollars and we spend it wisely. We put it into one, when we have a surplus, you know, one-time expenses or ongoing expenses that we know we can manage. We save it, or we put it back into tax relief. Jason, in this budget, I had another person say to me, well, the budget's too big. It was $232 billion of state money, roughly. And I said, I can cut it $51 billion if you want me to get it down to 180 by not giving you a tax cut. Because when we send money back to taxpayers as a tax cut to eliminate school taxes for seniors and cut them in half, that's a budget cost to us. In other words, we have to count that in the budget.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So out of that $232 billion, 20%, one out of every $5 we spent was on tax relief, for example.
Hmm.
So this goes back to working with Dustin in the House this session better than ever. And every member will tell you, better relationship between members. You talked about THC at the beginning. We passed the compassionate use program. All the people who are say, oh, what's going to happen when you ban THC? So we had three licenses in the state where you could go if you had cancer, PTSD, and other issues, health issues, where you could go and get the THC in low doses prescribed by a doctor.
Right.
But when all these illegal groups came in from out of state and built all these shops up, they basically put that out of business. And so now we've increased our TCUP, Texas Compassionate Use Program, for people who really need it, who really need it, prescribed by a doctor. And we've added chronic pain to it and a few other Crohn's disease, right, and a few others. But we've expanded the licenses from 3 to 12, and every license can have satellite stores, and we're putting them all over the state. So that's the other argument, is that where we're banning THC, very high potency, no one knows what it's in there. It's creating havoc in our schools, havocs in our society, big health issues. People can go to their doctor and they can get a prescription, and it will be regulated and it will be prescribed for what they need, as opposed to these people self-regulating, going into these shops and actually harming their health. So that was the other big, another big issue we passed this session. So a lot was done, been a great session, always more to do. And I'm just the luckiest guy in the world to be the Lieutenant Governor of Texas. Great job. Well,
considering the compassionate use expansion that you guys did this session, and you've been doing it for the past few sessions as well, that surprised me that there was still so much conservative pushback. I mean, you know, banning THC right here, the you know, illegal side of it, but then expanding it over here for veterans and for others who need it, it would seem that that would blunt some of this opposition.
Jason, when you say the pushback, to my knowledge, one talk show host, I'm sure there's another one somewhere, one who, I see the same quotes, one national talk show host, one, and they don't know the, you know, I want the people who are saying, oh, we shouldn't ban this, let them sit in a hearing, yeah, and have the mothers of children that they've lost to this. Let them hear that testimony. They haven't heard that testimony. I know I asked them, did you hear the testimony? No, I didn't hear the testimony. How many stores do we have? Oh, 8,000? Oh, I didn't know we had that many. How many McDonald's are there? I have no, again, the facts I gave at the beginning of this interview.
Yeah.
This has been a military style assault on Texas by the cannabis industry, because we have never legalized recreational marijuana. Again, there's some people that want to do that. I get it. I respect their opinion. And they've done it through the back door, and that's what we're stopping. We're not stopping the people who need to get help, like our veterans and others who have illnesses and pain that need help.
Governor, thanks for the time. Always appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.